This is The Road Forward, an election special from The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, and all this hour we're taking your calls, your questions, listening to your reactions, your cheers, your hopes, your criticisms, your frustrations, even your venting, to the election of Donald Trump as the next president of the United States. You can call us at 800-543-2543. Again, that's 800-543-2543. And The Road Forward begins now.
No dream is too big. No challenge is too great. Nothing we want for our future is beyond our reach.
I'm a unifier. I know people are going to find that a little bit hard to believe, but believe me, I am a unifier.
We won with everything.
I am going to be the greatest jobs president that God ever created.
Trump for security is the best. Trump for the military is the best. Trump for the economy is the best. I don't mean by a little bit.
I'm really rich.
I have great relationship with God.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
The president-elect of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. Have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
Get them out of here. Get them out. Out, out, out.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
To have a country, you have to have a strong border. You have to have a really strong border.
They're out of here.
I will build a great, great wall.
Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall.
I want to build the wall.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Welcome to The Road Forward. I am Todd Zwillick of The Takeaway from WNYC and Public Radio International, and it has been a tumultuous, bewildering, at times frightening election. And a year ago, just about nobody could have guessed that this is where we'd be one day after the presidential election. Again, we're going to be taking your calls all this hour, and our phone lines are open now. And we want to hear from you, whether you're celebrating, whether you're in despair, if you want to cheer, if you want to vent, are you terrified, or do you have hope? Let's try to keep our eyes forward for this hour. Can this country be unified under a President Donald Trump? And if not, if our divides are just too great, and if we're living in two separate worlds, can we find a way to align them so at least no harm is done to this republic? Again, you can call us at 800-543-2543. That number again, 800-543-2543. We've got several guests who are going to be joining us. Gail Sheehy, author of Hillary's Choice, is going to be joining us in just a minute or two. But let's get to a couple of your calls just to get us started. Steve is in Pennsylvania, and you're up first. Hi, Steve.
Todd, how are you this evening?
Go ahead.
Good. I just got a couple things I just want to get off my chest, you know. I understand maybe people think that Donald Trump's a bad choice. I did not vote for him, but I just can't grasp how everybody is just throwing him under the bus the way he was as a role model, as a president. You know, what about the Clintons? Look what happened with Bill Clinton. I mean, you don't hear any of the negativity about any of the Clintons, but you always hear the negativity about Donald Trump. Okay, he is the president. I just can't grasp why everything is one-sided. Hey, let's give the guy a chance. I mean, he's got 4 years. If no one likes him, then we vote him out.
All right, Steve, thank you, because Hillary Clinton herself said today we have to have our minds open and give Donald Trump a chance to be president. Julie is in Philadelphia listening on WHYY. Hi, Julie. You're next.
Hi. Two questions. One, is Trump going to be prosecuted for the rape of a 13-year-old girl next month? And second, how does a businessman and you know, with a number of large enterprises conduct the presidency without a number of conflicts of interest?
First, on the second question, Julie, it's interesting. There have been a lot of questions as to how Donald Trump's financials are handled in the traditional presidential way. The way this is usually done is with blind trusts, right? You sell everything, stick it in a fund where the president doesn't know what the assets are. Therefore, that eliminates conflict of interest, or at least the appearance thereof. Donald Trump can't not know that he owns Trump Tower and all of his businesses. So I think that issue is yet to be resolved. On the former, you are correct. There is a case in which Donald Trump is accused of the rape of a 13-year-old girl. The quality of that case is under some question. The accuser remains anonymous, was going to come out publicly last week and decided not to do so. So a lot of the public hasn't heard a lot about it. And if the accuser does go public and identify themselves, it will probably get a lot more coverage. Right now, the quality of that accusation is under some degree of doubt, I think. But Julie, thanks for the call from Philadelphia. I want to bring in our guest for at least the first half of this hour, Gail Sheehy. Many of you know she is author of Hillary's Choice, the authoritative biographer, really, of the life and career of Hillary Clinton. She's also a contributing editor to Vanity Fair and somebody that we wanted to have in to have part of this conversation. Gail Sheehy, welcome.
I'm thrilled to be here.
And it's wonderful to have you back. You know, we are going to be looking forward, and let's look back just to this campaign until last night very quickly, because as somebody who's really spent a lot of time understanding the political strategies and the worldview of Hillary Clinton, people are going through state by state, through the score, through the votes in state by state, and really starting to realize that in many places, the Donald Trump victory, which is an electoral victory, not a popular vote victory, mm-hmm. Really wasn't quite the huge white working voter wave that it first appeared. For instance, mm-hmm. in Wisconsin, a place where Hillary Clinton lost, Donald Trump got fewer votes than Mitt Romney got, fewer votes than John McCain got. It was really a failure of the Clinton campaign to bring out turnout. And that's just one place. There are other examples to bring out Obama voters, to bring out turnout to win this election. And in a place like Wisconsin, it appears that Donald Trump didn't win as much as Hillary lost,
yeah. You know, I was in Ohio the last 4 days before the election talking to voters, and I found first just masses amount of misinformation that people had who were on the fence, who wanted to know, you know, they were afraid to vote for Trump, but they didn't want to vote for Hillary because they'd heard that she was a murderer and she was a liar and she was going to be going to jail before the election and all kinds of crazy things. But even among those who really were for Hillary or they had a yard sign, they weren't as excited. You know, they were kind of grimly slogging it through or planning to go, but nobody was saying, I can't wait to go and vote for Hillary. And if you don't have that kind of enthusiasm, which goes all the way back to the beginning of her campaign, there really was never any great groundswell of enthusiasm. Oh, boy, guess what? Hillary Clinton's going to run. I mean, we knew that for 2 years, and she was, you know, playing close to the vest. And I think that whole thing that I always found the most objectionable and difficult about dealing with Hillary Clinton is her secrecy, her need to just keep everything close to the vest. I understand why she did it. She had a father who was never respectful of her, you know, was a brutal man, created a lot of havoc in their household. And she had to really make it on her own. Then she had a husband that she adored, and she took on the fighting role for him and, you know, saved him again and again until finally she saved him from the consequences of impeachment, and he wasn't actually convicted. And only then, at 53, did she step out into her own career. So, you know, I give her a lot of credit and respect for her incredible focus and resilience. But the fact that she could never really reveal herself to us as a human being just made it difficult for people to connect with her.
Does that help explain also that there's the remarkable part of this phenomenon, one more sort of moment on last night? Mm-hmm. You're looking at a President Obama who's leaving office with Reagan numbers, with 55 or 56%
right.
popularity, not 30% like George W. Bush, where you would expect a big repudiation coming. This is a president leaving office with a country that's behind him.
But not very long, because Donald Trump is going to do everything he can to smash his reputation and his legacy. Donald Trump is out for vengeance, and he will knock down everybody who opposed him, every media person who was difficult for him. You know, that's what he does.
There's a great deal of concern among many people whether that penchant for vengeance or for knocking down people who opposed him, whether he brings that to the Oval Office or whether he lets it lay until another time, because that kind of power, if he brings it to the lens and to the pulpit of the White House, is potentially very troubling. I think there are a lot of open questions about what kind of presidency this will be. Let's get back to your calls to get your take here on The Road Forward. Again, the number is 800-543-2543. I'm joined in the studio by Gail Sheehy, author of Hillary's Choice. Nyla is in Fearless Hills and is a Muslim voter in Pennsylvania. I was just in Pennsylvania. Nyla, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me. So I guess my concern, and I guess in talking with friends, everybody is pretty much in shock. I am a Muslim American, and I'm born and raised here. And it seemed, even in the elections, that, you know, President-elect Trump, he questioned Muslim Americans' worth as far as patriotism, or they have to prove themselves, or they have to do these tests. And it's absurd. And it's absurd to hear about a ban on Muslims. It almost feels like, even though I'm born and raised in this country, and I am a Muslim American, a proud Muslim American, I'm somehow not part of that community. I'm not considered American by Trump standards.
So, Nyla, what is your feeling going forward now for the next 4 years of a Trump presidency? I don't assume that you're going to flee the country. How are you starting to process what your place in this society is?
You know, I'm just kind of, I think my fear is, you know, there's certain policies that may not directly affect me, but I feel like his rhetoric has emboldened racists and bigots. Mm-hmm. And I am a visibly Muslim American, a female American, so I do wear hijab. So when I walk in the street, I do have this anxiety that perhaps somebody else might not have, that because of this rhetoric, because the president of the United States, our president of the United States, says it's okay to say things and do things, and it's somehow okay to treat somebody that looks differently, to treat them as somebody that's not as American as somebody else. I'm not Caucasian looking, but therefore I'm not as American as the next person. No, I think if Taizer Khan and everybody else and all the other individuals that have, you know, American Muslims that have been vocal, if anything, that should tell you how patriotic or how American we are. And then as far as fleeing the country, what other country would we go to? I was born and raised here. Like, I just don't, when people say that because of what, my ethnicity, because my parents' parents were from another country, therefore I should go to that country. All Americans are immigrants.
Yeah, Nyla,
unless you're a Native American. So it's just, I mean, it's extremely frustrating.
And it's an issue that's been on the minds of many, many people. And I want you to know that I brought up the very issue of people like you with Trump supporters last night in Pennsylvania when I asked them how should Muslim Americans feel about Donald Trump's election. And many of them said, you know, for many, many years, I felt like this country didn't belong to me. That was many of their answers, not direct antipathy to Muslims, but that they had lost something that they were getting back. Let's go to Omar now, who is in Mykonet, Texas. Hi, Omar. You're next.
Hi. This is Amir from McKinney, Texas. Thank you very much for having me on the call. I'm really excited that, you know, being a Muslim and being able to speak on media at the same time, and Nyla is also a Muslim, and she also spoke pretty much similar to what I have. The thing is that I actually voted for Gary Johnson, and the reason I did that is because one is a liar, the other one is an idiot. That was the reason why I couldn't have chosen either or. The reason why I chose someone like Gary Johnson is because of the fact that I wouldn't have to live the day whoever, either one of those, would have been a president and would have. See, actions speak louder than words. Now, the point is,
Omar, can I ask you while I have you on the line, because we won't have long to talk, now that Donald, given the rhetoric of this campaign and some of the policies that Donald Trump has advocated, do you have any fears or concerns for your place in the community, for your role in the community, and what might happen? Or do you think it's sort of campaign rhetoric and we'll go on with business as usual?
Not at all. And I basically exactly coincide with the point that, you see, during election, we make a lot of promises. We make promises that cannot be met, and those will actually be resentment. Those will be the reasons why your voters or your followers or your supporters would actually question you in your very first 99 or 100 days in office. And if you're putting such unachievable goals, you're definitely posing yourself a failure. So, Mr. Trump, I guess you're fired already.
Well, it's a really important question, and a lot of people are wondering how much of the rhetoric of this campaign translates into potential policies in the Oval Office. If it was just campaigning and bluster, maybe we leave it there. If it's something that's brought to the White House that smashes to pieces a lot of cultural and political norms that we've had in this country, that's a frightening thought for, I think, many people who've participated in this election. We're going to get back to Gail Sheehy in just a moment, who is my guest. But first, I want to go to Mark in Pompano Beach in Florida. Mark, you are in an important swing state that tipped red and went right to Donald Trump.
Thank you very much for having me. I just wanted to express my feelings as far as the way I voted. I did vote for Donald Trump, and the reason I voted for him was because I believe that Hillary was in the office for 8 years with her her husband, which was not he ended up towards the end to be kind of a problem with sexual activity. That you know, that kind of disturbed me to put her and him back into the White House.
Mark, why was President Clinton's sexual transgressions and his problem with his sexual behavior something that made you judge Hillary Clinton?
Because of the media, actually, the media that was advertising about Hillary and the way she was protecting her husband and degrading the women that were coming up against her husband.
Mark, thank you so much for the call from Pompano Beach, Florida. Florida did go for Donald Trump. We appreciate it. Gail Sheehy, we had two calls from two Muslim Americans there, which raised a point I wanted to talk to you about. Part of the road forward here is, if not reconciliation, sort of a way to adapt what's gone on in this campaign, not only Donald Trump's choices for his rhetoric, but what it's exposed among tens of millions of Americans to either agree with it and follow it or simply brush it off and ignore it as though it's something that didn't bother them, to sort of accept it. Now we have a situation where voters like Nyla and others are now in a country where the president has been elected and they feel like some kind of reckoning has to happen.
And you've been alienated. Yeah, absolutely. And here, Nyla is a citizen. I mean, so many of the people who are feeling really agitated are already citizens, but their children come home from school crying, saying, do we have to go back? Do we have to move out? They're telling us we can't stay here. We don't belong here. There have been so many wounds from the hypermasculine threats and the naked misogyny that just don't go away, and they can't be repressed because then they just become worse. One study found that half of teenage girls now have a more negative body image because of all the body-shaming remarks that they've heard on television and the radio. People who were used to being out as LGBTs sometimes now feel like they have to go back in the closet. And in particular, people who've had trauma in their childhood, you know, a physically or sexually abusive parent or so on, they are really re-traumatized by the kinds of things and the kind of talk that Trump has legitimized and celebrated. So we have a lot of repair work to do. And I think the only way we can do it is kind of community by community. You know, when this campaign was total war, right? So when you end a war, the way people usually deal with it is a reconciliation commission. And that takes a long time of bringing people from opposing sides together to finally listen to each other and try to put themselves in the other person's shoes and feel some empathy. Well, that can be done on the kind of community level. And for instance, if there's a community where there are Muslim Americans, but there are other kinds of Americans who really haven't known their Muslim neighbors, if somebody organizes a reconciliation meeting, people can talk to each other at the community level and learn how to be good citizens together and maybe even neighbors.
We're talking about the road forward, a Trump presidency, and the potential for reconciliation across America and in communities. That's Gail Sheehy, author of Hillary's Choice. This is The Road Forward. I am Todd Zwillick. We have a short break, and then we get back to your call. Stay with us.
I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard.
Donald Trump, in his acceptance speech, his victory speech last night, talking about the concession that he got from Hillary Clinton. Welcome back. It is The Road Forward, and I'm Todd Zwillick. We're taking your calls on 800-543-2543 about the road forward after the election, the shocking election to most political observers, even many of Donald Trump's own supporters who didn't think that he would win this race. Your calls, your reactions, your cheers, your venting, your frustrations, and your hopes. That's what we want to hear this hour at 800-543-2543. I'm joined in the studio by Gail Sheehy. She's author of Hillary's Choice, a great biographer of the life and work of Hillary Clinton. We're going to take a couple more of your calls now. Jonathan is in Miami Beach listening on the great WLRN Miami Public Radio. Hi, Jonathan.
Oh, good evening. How are you?
Great. Go right ahead.
I'm very happy with the results of the election. I wasn't in love with Donald Trump, but I definitely wasn't in love with Hillary Moore. I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own business in Dade County, and I have been struggling to compete with illegal immigrants for the last 10 years. I cannot compete with their low ball wages. And when the government allows this immigration to overflow us, they are manipulating wages, and that is wrong. I also don't like having to show my tax return to go see my doctor. What business is it of that? How did that happen? Why am I having to show my tax return to get health care? That is absolutely insane. Also, this name recognition that Americans have with Clintons and the Bushes and the Kennedys, you got to get over that, America. It's not the name, it's the person.
All right, Jonathan, you sound like one voter who's happy to move on from dynasty and to get a brand new fresh start with Donald Trump. I will say you sound frustrated with Obamacare, with a Republican House and Senate, and Donald Trump's candidacy. The wheels are going to start to turn on the undoing of Obamacare pretty quickly. I don't know how fast it's going to happen, but those wheels are definitely going to turn. Corey is in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Corey. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Very well.
Honored to be on the show today. Two things. Number one, I think that this was a message from voters to both Democrats and Republican leadership, who really dropped the ball in failing to listen to what voters have been asking for the last 4 years. And I think that Donald Trump is a result of people saying, well, screw the both of you. We're going to put somebody in there that is going to do the things that we have been trying to say that no one has been listening. And then to even add insult to injury on that one, I think that the Republicans, even though that they pretty much came out on top on this election, I think that they still have to be very, very, very careful to really listen to what the voters want. Because just as they have shown that they will vote against what they want, they will vote them out as well.
Corey, you're there in St. Louis, Missouri. Is that correct?
Yes.
Are you African American?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a view on why so many African American voters who supported President Obama appeared to stay home in this election and not come out for Hillary Clinton?
To give a little bit of background of myself, I work in the power generation industry. I have been affected by a lot of the EPA changes and regulations under the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. And also as a contractor, I also have been greatly affected by the Affordable Care Act as well, which was two of the reasons that made me go with my decision to support Donald Trump.
A real economic case there. That's fascinating. Well, Corey, thanks for the call from St. Louis, Missouri. And I want to stay in St. Louis now because we have Jo Mannies joining us. She's political reporter for St. Louis Public Radio with a view from St. Louis and from Missouri for this election. Hi, Jo.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you, Jo Mannies. Missouri is a state that stayed deep red for Donald Trump here. There was a time when Missouri was thought of as a potential swing state, and it is no more.
Yes. I mean, Missouri actually, until yesterday, Democrats held all but one of the statewide offices in Jefferson City. The Republicans had a clean sweep. There's now just one left, and that was a person who wasn't on the ballot. She won't be up for 2 years. So Missouri is going deep red, at least for the next couple years, beginning in January. And Trump did extremely well. He got 100,000 more votes than Mitt Romney did. And whereas Mrs. Clinton got 170,000 votes less than Barack Obama. So the upshot was that Trump had a 20-point edge, huge, huge wave, and just carried all the other Republicans on the statewide ticket with him.
There is also something called Amendment 6 in Missouri, a photo ID requirement for voting. We've seen voter ID requirements across the country. Some of these are blamed for voter suppression or lower minority turnout in other states, including North Carolina, or at least similar laws. What has gone on there in Missouri, and is there any evidence that voter ID has led to what amounts to voter suppression?
Well, it was just passed yesterday, and it won't go into effect until next year.
So it's coming.
Yes, it's coming. The General Assembly had passed an implementation bill just a few months ago over the objections of Governor Jay Nixon, a Democrat. The implementation bill says it won't go into effect unless the state spends a certain amount of money. They're expecting it'll be at least $2 million a year. To get the free IDs to people. And this still may come up for a court challenge. Our state Supreme Court had tossed out earlier ones, so there may end up being some litigation on this. But in any event, this will probably consume a lot of attention next year.
You had a tightly contested Senate race, too. Senator Roy Blunt is somebody that I cover in the Senate, Republican, former House leadership member, running for a second term in the Senate, who had a real credible challenge from a Democrat who made one of the most famous and well-viewed YouTube ads of the entire cycle. But it wasn't enough.
Yes. There were many people in the state, including some Republicans I had talked to even Monday night at a rally for Eric Greitens, who ended up running for governor. And some of the Republicans there were telling me they knew a lot of people who were voting for Jason Kander, the Democrat who was running against Roy Blunt, as well as Trump and Greitens. Kander was kind of, while he's a Democrat, was kind of bringing up the same outsider image. I'm going to shake things up, and the same type of thing that Trump was doing, except Kander's only 35. And so Kander had really generated a lot of excitement. He ended up only losing by 3 percentage points. And when you consider the fact that Trump carried the state by 20, which was double what the Democrats had expected, if Trump's edge had been, let's say, half that, Kander probably would have won.
Right, on the coattails.
Yes, yes. He got drowned by the Trump deluge.
If you are in the St. Louis area, this is a great time for you to call in. If you're from St. Louis or anywhere from Missouri, while we have Jo Mannies on the line with us, political reporter from St. Louis Public Radio, we do want to hear from you. Those of you in the Show Me State or anywhere around St. Louis, this is your time to call in on 800-543-2543. Joshua is in St. Louis in Joe's town. Hi, Joshua. Go right ahead.
Hi, I love Jo Mannies. She does a great job.
Oh, good.
And KWU, it's fantastic, especially Saturdays with the symphony. But I was amazed that the media all pretended that this was a surprise that he won. The coverage and the polling had all been basically said, wow, it's because I'm on air. Can't use my words. So.
Oh, that's okay. We all get that sometimes, Josh. Don't worry.
Anyhow,
I wasn't surprised. What I was surprised is the lack of coverage from NPR, and I hope now that Hillary's not running and gone, you'll cover the Podesta emails from 28 to 38. Those have so much information in them. It's crazy, and I wish I had gotten it from the Takeaway. I had come to rely on you for that information. But anyone who read those could not possibly have voted for Hillary. Now, I was a Bernie Sanders person, and I voted for Jill Stein yesterday. So I'm part of the 1% who want to change. But the greatest thing I heard were five speeches from Trump today, and they were all older speeches, but they were talking about building infrastructure. They were talking about jobs, and it wasn't all about building a wall. It was about providing jobs. And then the
Joshua, let me
do
say, well, Josh, you raise an interesting point, because one of the most interesting articles I saw today was the counterintuitive sort of mind meld that Donald Trump may have with Democratic leader Chuck Schumer over infrastructure. For all of their divisions, those two people may actually have a lot to agree on infrastructure projects in a way that even some Republicans might not like. So you may have hit on something there, Joshua, that might be very important over the next year, even in legislation. Mary is in Philadelphia now, listening on WHYY. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Go right ahead.
Okay, number one, first thing off, I want to say that I feel as if there's been too much lumping people in a monolithic pile if they are white working class. I'm a white working class widow. I was for Bernie, and when he didn't get the nomination, I was for Hillary. Second point I want to make is that I don't think that we can really take all of this misogyny coming out of Trump. We cannot take it lightly. We can't brush it off. We can't take a boys will be boys attitude. I believe the man has a very, very serious character defect in the way that he relates to women. I fully expect to see this play out in his presidency, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we see some scandals coming out of this.
Mary, thank you so much for the call from Philadelphia. Gail Sheehy, whether or not the media drills down on Donald Trump's particular shortcomings or attitudes when it comes to women, many of which were aired out in the campaign, it's brought up a gigantic conversation in this country. Everything from Access Hollywood tapes, of course, not only Donald Trump's behavior, but also the way the electorate and the media and the Trump campaign treated Hillary's candidacy.
Right.
And her experience as not just a candidate, but a woman candidate, is inextricable from the whole thing.
Well, you know, prowling around behind her at the second debate, you know, in a kind of a real power move on her, looked like he was stalking her, scarifying, actually threatening her life twice, calling on Second Amendment people to take care of her, calling on her Secret Service people to disarm. How does that make just regular women watching this on TV who don't have Secret Service protection feel that, you know, you have to go back and be the humble little woman? And Trump has even said, boy, don't ever send a wife to work, because that's hell to pay for. If I come home and dinner isn't ready, I hit the roof. What are we talking about, back to the kitchen for women? This is crazy stuff. It's 30 years out of date. And I think that does leave lasting fears and anger among women. And that has to be as watched. The thing of it is that Donald Trump never apologizes. He told us that at the beginning, and he's been good to his word. So he never apologized to Khizr Khan for denigrating his son as an American who saved his crew from a suicide bomber. So he hasn't apologized to, you know, Miss Piggy, Miss Housekeeping, because she was Latina and gained some weight. He never apologizes to anybody. So it's very difficult to depend on him to pull the country together or to be the reconciliation president. We have to do it on our own, community by community.
Joe Manis in St. Louis, what do you think of that idea? I wonder about the view from a deeply red state when you have a president-elect who's from Manhattan and so much of the media covering these issues from New York and Washington, D.C., and I put myself in that sort of beltway East Coast crowd. I kind of have to. Your view from a deep red state of these types of conversations?
Well, I think all you had to do is look at our vote totals here. We had a lot of rural counties that went 70%, 75% for Donald Trump, the highest percentages I've ever seen in a presidential contest. Missouri was very much polarized over him. The rural votes were the ones that brought him in. And in many of the rural communities in Missouri, like rural communities elsewhere in the Midwest, the towns lost their factory that they had in the 1970s and 80s. The people are really frustrated. We're considered one of the meth capitals of the world, where we have a lot of illegal drugs being produced. And in some cases in the rural areas, it's because people feel like there's no other way to make a living. So there's a lot of economic frustration, and he tapped into that. I mean, right or wrong, he tapped into it. And so I think people are going to be paying a lot of attention to see if some of this infrastructure talk mm-hmm. leads to jobs. And I think they're focusing more on that, and they're ignoring the other legitimate issues that Hillary Clinton brought up about temperament. But there are some who say that she failed to focus on some of these issue differences at the end and made it too much about him and not just what he stood for. And in rural communities, they weren't paying attention to some of the misogyny talk, right or wrong. They're concerned about, well, is he going to get a factory back in our town? Is he going to be able to get us jobs for our kids because they're now leaving for the cities? It's this kind of thing. And you saw it like in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, a lot of these other Midwestern states. I think that's why you saw some of those defections at the end. That's what this is about.
Gail Sheehy, I did see a phenomenon similar to what Joe Manese is describing. I spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania in this election.
I saw it in Youngstown, Ohio.
And when I asked women, how can you process this latest disgrace?
Right.
Many of them did say, I hated that, I didn't like it, but yeah. I have other concerns that are more important.
Yeah. Well, sure. Your livelihood and your place in the culture, which is one of the biggest beefs of all of the Trump voters, is that they, particularly the men, white working class men, have lost their primacy in the culture. And a lot of that, we've fragmented into tribes. We've devolved as a society over the last maybe 30 years. We have the upwardly mobiles with good educations who gravitate to the big cities, and they're very comfortable with technology and with robotization and with starting back with automation. And then you have people who are still in the small towns where they grew up or rural areas. They want to do what just their dad did, but what their dad's economy has long ago dried up, and a lot of them are still waiting for it to come back, and they believe that Donald Trump is going to bring it back. But it's not going to come back. That is going to lead to much more frustration, I fear.
And also a question of what Donald Trump does as president when he's not able to deliver on some of these grand promises and what people expect. Where does he go with his politics when he has to make up for the fact that some of these things, because the world has changed, aren't deliverable? We're going to get one more call here. Henry is in Dallas on KERA. We've got just about a minute. Hi, Henry. Welcome. Was this your first time voting?
This was. I just turned 18 on Saturday.
That's spectacular. I'm so glad you voted.
Thank you. Yes. So I go to a fairly liberal school here in Dallas. And I did vote for Hillary. And this morning we got to school with a very somber mood. Our teachers, many of whom have young children and many of whom are Hispanic, said that their kids were asking them, does this mean we have to go back, mm-hmm. Even though their families have lived here for generations?
Right.
I have friends whose families might have to leave. And I have friends who are minorities, and they're very concerned about what this election means. But I think it's really important that we come together in order to move on as a society and to continue doing what we've done for the last hundreds of years.
Henry, I welcome you to the great core of American voters. Congratulations you just turned 18, so I'm so glad you went in the booth, and I'm glad that you called us on the road forward to help join our conversation and our look forward. So thanks for that. This is The Road Forward. We're going to take a very short break and then come back to your calls on 800-543-2543. Gail Sheehy, author of Hillary's Choice, is in the studio with me, and we're going to be taking your calls for the rest of this hour after this short break. I'm Todd Zwillick, and this is The Road Forward. We're taking your calls on 800-543-2543.
Hi, this is Katie calling from Akron, Ohio.
This is Jay from North Carolina.
My name is Jean. I'm calling from Miami, Florida.
Jim Graham from Charlotte, North Carolina.
This is Nora. I'm calling from Miami, Florida.
I'm exceedingly excited about the future with Donald J. Trump as president. I'm super happy he is not a politician, and I think the people that are against him will know later that they were wrong. He's not the racist bigot that anybody thinks he is, nor are we.
It's quite shocking to be a woman, 32 years old, and to have a man who does not even value my life as our president. And it's not going to stop me because I'm also very determined that I'm going to continue to work for women, I'm going to continue to work for girls, and work for people so that we can achieve equality.
The Democrats are poor losers. They claim that they're the party of tolerance, but they are intolerant when they lose.
As a gay male, I'm not so much worried about Donald Trump as I am his vice president. If something happens to him, I feel the country's really going to be in for a repressive next 4 years.
Don't blame Gary Johnson, don't blame Jill Stein, don't blame James Comey, or any of this other stuff. The Democrats need to look inside, see what they stand for, and if they continue to deliver milquetoast candidates like Hillary Clinton, they will continue to see the same results.
It is a real disappointment to hear people scapegoat third-party voters. If anything, it is this pattern of strategic voting that got us in this mess in the first place.
I got the news first thing this morning. The first thing that I did was vomit. And then I had to coax my 7-year-old to get out of bed for school today. And then he said, I think I'm going to be sad all day. So complete crush for everyone in my family.
I'm very happy about Trump being president. It lets America see that we can move forward and become united, as in capitalized.
In the wake of incompetence and arrogance against perceived corruption, it looks like incompetence wins.
Your calls here on The Road Forward on 800-543-2543 on your hopes, your fears, aspirations, frustrations, all for the election of Donald Trump as president of the United States. I am Todd Zwillick. I'm joined in the studio by Gail Sheehy, author of Hillary's Choice, and also Joe Manis is still with us, political reporter at St. Louis Public Radio in Missouri. Let's go to your calls. Maryland is in Queens, New York, listening on our home station of WNYC. Hi, Maryland.
Yes, hello.
Go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to tell a story that happened to one of my friends here. She was on the train, and a white Caucasian lady walked up to her and told her, basically, now that my president is elected, now hopefully I won't have to see people like you anymore in the same car as I am in. And she was African American. So I am actually completely surprised, and I just cannot believe how could this country vote for a man who literally insulted, berated women and people who are in minority groups. I really just can't. I fear that people will act upon their racist thoughts, and I'm just actually a little afraid as to what will come.
Marilyn, it's a terrible story to hear, and I hope that you're able to be there for your friend after that experience. Daniel is in Brooklyn, also listening on WNYC. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for my call.
Go right ahead.
This is the first time that I know of that either overtly or subtly violence has been turned in an election. And I think that it's affected the way that the Democrats have been vocal about their choices for fear of harassment. And as much as this has been versus that, this has been a gun versus not guns election. And the people with guns have been threatening violence.
Daniel, you're talking about the potential for violence to have been part of this election and how much potential violence was part of the rhetoric. We have kind of a bad line there. We'll try to get back to you. But Joe Manis, it makes me want to go to you because there in St. Louis, you know, St. Louis was the epicenter, you know, in Ferguson, of really the beginning of this latest iteration of the debate about police violence and race relations in this country. And you have a city embedded in that deep red state where this debate really, really raged. And I wonder sort of like how different the voices are coming out of St. Louis in this election, maybe versus the rest of Missouri?
Yeah, one of the things that happened during the campaigns for various statewide officers, especially governor, is that the Republican candidates, many of whom were from the St. Louis area, were campaigning on law and order and pointing to the unrest in Ferguson as an example of people being out of control, talking about the arson, this and that, saying there should have been more of a heavy police presence, whereas you had many Democrats and some in the middle who were saying, wait a minute, no, this was about people being treated fairly. There has been a lot of effort to try to bring police and minorities together and try to ease some of the tensions. But it was stunning during the campaigns where it became a fight over who was for law and order and who wasn't. And I think that over the next few months, over the next year or two, we're going to see how that plays out. Our state capital in Jefferson City, which is about 130 miles away from St. Louis, they just see St. Louis as an alien being at the edge of the state. Missouri is mainly controlled by rural legislators and rural presidents, even though we do have a lot of officials who come from St. Louis, but they pretend to be rural when they're in Jefferson City. So it's a whole different mindset where people were just seeing what happened in Ferguson as an embarrassment as opposed to something that needed to be solved.
Joe Menis in St. Louis, thank you so much for being with us and for giving us your view from St. Louis and from Missouri, which went bigly, as they say, for Donald Trump. We really appreciate having your input here on The Road Forward. Joe Menis, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Gail Sheehy, the debate over law and order was an amazing one in this debate. There were definitely upticks in crime in a lot of cities, but you're looking at a country where violent crime was down drastically over the last 30 years.
And definitely in New York City, after Giuliani left. I think one of the important things we have to think about, this is a good saying, choose your enemies carefully or you'll become like them. Too many people will now want to be like Trump, and bully other people. But if we become like Trump, if we engage in character assassination and demonizing people who are different than we are, we lose our ethical standing. So I heard about a relationship project with young black men in Minneapolis that really had a great opening today. 15 African-American boys got together. They had two black authority figures who were their facilitators and a white psychologist who started this program. And they started talking about how the election night made them feel. Some of them said they saw their mother cry for the first time. Tough black mothers don't cry often, but they did about this. They made their younger brothers and sisters were scared. The mediators talked about protections in our system that, a president can't just throw people out of the country or, tell the cops to go, stop and frisk all over the country. That's local. Those are local and state laws. And reassured them that it's not going to change overnight. But they talked about how they have to keep working against racism in every way they can. And the best way they can do that is to do well in high school so they can get into college and earn a seat at the table so they can help shape the government so that it won't be so open to racism. And the facilitators asked the boys, how do you feel now? And the boys said they felt much better and that they were going to go out and take action. Now they had a way to work for change at the grassroots level, and they felt empowered.
And empathy sounds like it's so empathy. Important there. And in fact, we got a tweet from Jen Diaz just during the show here. How can Trump ask for unity for us when his supporters refuse to even empathize? That was Jen Diaz on Twitter. Let's go back to your calls here on The Road Forward on 800-543-2543. Marilyn is in Fort Worth in Texas. Hi, Marilyn. Welcome.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm 69 years old. I've been teaching for over 40 years. I'm white, but I teach black students. I find that the black students are gentlemen who are very careful of my feelings in every regard. And I think a lot of the things that have been slapped up against young black men are just unfair. But more specifically, I am so offended by the things that Trump has said. And that the idea that he can grope women and not be arrested by it. I live in Texas, and yes, I am a bit afraid. If somebody groped me, I can't guarantee that the police would do anything about it. Well, why should they?
Marilyn,
here we've got the president doing it.
Thank you for the call, Marilyn from Fort Worth in Texas. I want to remind all of you that you can also tweet us at The Takeaway if you want to interact with the show from your computer or your phone. We're always here at The Takeaway on Twitter. Sophia is in Queens listening on WNYC. Hi, Sophia.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, people for a long time stopped listening to each other, especially elites, really listening. And, I mean, this country is received split directly in half, practically. And in order to bridge this whole situation, we have to have a really ugly conversation on every side, ugly for people who think that, you know, that there's too much racism and too much that it's not progressive enough, and those who think that it's too progressive or they don't like that phrase. I feel like from what I know from a lot of my friends, and I worked the election yesterday, and I'm a registered Republican, but I did not vote for Trump. And I didn't vote for Hillary either. I voted third party because it's just too much. But anyway, the thing is that with all this stuff, we have to really be able to look each other in the face. And a lot of the white people that I know feel like all this stuff from the left has been like they've been getting it shoved down their throat that you're wrong, you're bad, you're no good because you're white. And this is I don't know if this was an intentional communication by any group or another, but if you want the side who has power to give some of it up, you can't beat them over the head and tell them that they're so rotten and that if they vote against their own, that unless they vote against their own self-interest, that they're racist.
Well, Sophia, it sounds like the kind of future that you want is similar to a reconciliation commission that Gail Sheehy has been talking about, if not a commission itself, an effort for people to get face-to-face and have really difficult and maybe abjectly honest conversations with one another about what we've experienced and what's led to this divide. So maybe, Sophia, you and Gail Sheehy have sort of a meeting of the minds there. Paul is in Philadelphia listening on WHYY. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call. Sort of just to touch on what you were just – the discussion with your last caller. I think that social media – almost prevents that face-to-face conversations and real dialogue because, you know, whether it was both campaigns, because I actually point to both campaigns in terms of utilizing social media to really just have a negative tone. No matter who won, you would have today folks on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, you know, making their stance, and it would be just as passionate and in-your-face type stuff. But on social media, not having a real honest and open conversation about reconciliation. So I guess I'm very concerned at how social media is really, you know, for me, making great the country great again, making America great again. It's how do you tone down social media and how do you maybe draw back on or add some rules to the even the election with politicians using social media,
or try to get outside of those closed rooms of our closed environments on social media and walk through the doors, you know, to talk to one another directly. So much of social media political interaction is stovepiped, according to what you already believe, and I think it's a real problem. I agree with you, Paul. Roy is in the Bronx in New York. Hi, Roy. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I voted for Hillary, and I think this is a disaster. But I hate to be cynical. I kind of think that America deserves Trump in a way. I've not heard that view expressed a lot, but I don't think it's a coincidence that he's been elected. To me, he's a reflection of everything wrong about what our society values. We're content obsessed. We turn everything into entertainment. We love scandals, especially if it involves the rich, famous TV celebrities with fake tans. And you know, so I think this happened. I think we all let this happen, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And I think we love it. It's like it's a train wreck, and it's like it's or slowing down to watch an accident. It's there's some morbid curiosity, I think, in all of us that let this happen. Even your theme song, your opening theme song, it's very dramatic. Very
it was. It was. Roy, I want to thank you for the call, and it is something to think about. Every presidential election reflects more than the candidate itself, reflects what Americans want out of their politics and in some ways out of their culture. And I think you make a very sensitive observation there. Criselli in New Jersey, you might be the last call of the hour. Go right ahead.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to, you know, add that, no, I did not vote for Trump. I did vote for Hillary. I am African-American female. However, I don't think Trump being the president is the end of the world. I definitely think that his rhetoric and, you know, maybe some of his behavior is going to force, you know, the American citizens to actually stand up and stop complaining and put in the work.
Well, Criselli, Barack Obama, in a statement at the White House today, did tell everyone that no matter what happens in an election, the sun comes up the next day. That's exactly what President Obama said. Thanks for the call. Gail Sheehy, final thoughts.
Okay. Looking forward, we have three new rising stars in the Senate who are women. Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire, Tammy Duckworth, a strong veteran from Illinois, and Kamala Harris, the Attorney General of California. So I think we have to look forward to
Nevada, the first Latina elected to the Senate.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So we have, you know, there's a new generation coming up, and we don't need any more 69 and 70-year-olds at war with each other. I think we've got to look, you know, forward by looking back at the new generation coming up.
That's Gail Sheehy, author of Hillary's Choice, contributor to Vanity Fair. Thank you so much for joining me this hour.
My pleasure.
And thanks to you for your calls, your tweets, and your contribution to our hour. Do stay with us after this short break. We have another hour of The Road Forward coming from The Takeaway. I am Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent for The Takeaway. It's been a pleasure. Stick with us. We take a short break. This is The Road Forward, an election special from The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, and all this hour we're taking your calls, your questions, listening to your reactions, your cheers, your hopes, your criticisms, your frustrations, even your venting, to the election of Donald Trump as the next president of the United States. You can call us at 800-543-2543. Again, that's 800-543-2543, and The Road Forward begins now.
It's my honor. It's been an amazing two-year period. And I love this country. We have a great economic plan. We will double our growth.
I will restore law and order to our country.
I will build a better wall, and I'll build it for cheaper, and Mexico will pay.
I am so tired of politicians. Nobody knows them better than me. I know them.
I would bomb the out of them.
I would just bomb those suckers.
And that's right.
Take a look at my Twitter account.
I am going to be the greatest jobs president that God ever created.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Welcome to The Road Forward. This is Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent from The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI. And we're here to have you join us and have your say on this election of Donald Trump as the next president. We want your hopes, your aspirations, your frustrations. Some of you are dejected. Some of you are fearful. Some of you are frustrated. Many of you are proud. And lots of you are very, very hopeful. And that's what we want to get as we look forward in this hour. The number is 800-543-2545. 800-543 for you to call and join this conversation again. That's 800-543-2543. And you're joining us on Twitter as well. At The Takeaway is our Twitter handle. At Digital Roger tweets us, I'm Latino with two daughters, one biracial, a green card immigrant wife. How do I tell them with a straight face that it will all be okay? That's from Digital Roger on Twitter. Robbie is in St. Louis for our first call of the hour. Hi, Robbie. Go right ahead.
Hi. How are you? I just wanted to comment. I'm not surprised at the outcome. I'm disappointed, but I'm staying in St. Louis, you know, the metropolitan area, and you really saw no Trump signs out. You saw a lot of Hillary signs, and I know that they said that there was the secret Trump voter. But what I don't understand is if those voters were, you know, proud of who they were voting for, why was it a secret? And that's where the dialogue needs to begin, that, you know, if I'm talking to someone and they're insinuating that they're with Hillary, I'm starting to think now that all of my, you know, white female counterparts and, you know, who were so pro-Hillary, that they were actually really not for Hillary at all, but for Donald Trump, but just was too ashamed to say it. But how do we change things when we can't even communicate, you know, about what's really going on and what the issues are?
So
really
it makes you wonder what the, you know, what the prejudice and what the message is, Robbie. If you hear that somebody supports Donald Trump and you don't, you might have a great deal of preconceived notions about what they're about just by hearing how they vote. And I talked to a lot of Trump voters in Pennsylvania the other way. As soon as, you know, they met described a Hillary voter who they knew, they already had assumptions about what that person was about. And I think you're really onto something about the way people view each other and really how divisive, culturally divisive, this election has been. I really appreciate it. Fido is in Florida. Hi, Fido. You're next.
Hey, good afternoon. Good evening. How you doing?
Great. Go right ahead.
Listen, I echoed on the sentiment of the young lady that just called, and I just feel the same way in the sense that where even I'm disappointed. I'm a registered Republican, and if it's just more of just not even just more of just party lines, I'm just really disappointed in the fact that they actually chose this man. You know, I mean, I'm looking at my son. I'm a African-American male, and I look at my son, and I tell him every day that we have to work harder. If you have a man that's president and that could go in the rhetoric that he's done, alienating the whole country, and you have a man like Barack Obama who has had to basically had to be godlike or Jesus-like to be able to make it to where he's at. So to tell me that if you're white and you're rich, hey, you know, you could do and say whatever you want to say, and he's proven that. And it's just sad for minorities and everybody else in this country that, and foreigners that's in this country that has going to have to live with this decision.
Fido, thank you so much for the call, from Florida. I want to now bring in Jude Joffe Block, who's senior field correspondent for KJZZ. That's public radio in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Jude.
Hi there.
It's great to have you. You know, Arizona late in this election was a place where Hillary Clinton was playing, where a lot of those of us who get paid to analyze elections were saying, well, if Hillary Clinton is making inroads into red Arizona, she's going to have a real advantage here because she has a real shot in Arizona. Turns out, wasn't really the case.
No. At this point in time, it looks like there's Trump won the state with about 4.3% of the vote. But I have to say, we do have a lot of uncounted ballots, so we don't really know the margin of difference. But we do know Trump won this state.
Jude, Arizona is a place where immigration isn't theoretical. The immigration debate is direct. It's on the border. It's an issue on top of everybody's minds. Maricopa County, home of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was just ousted after 24 years in office. One of the campaign promises that Donald Trump is going to have to take immediate steps to begin to at least appear to deliver on is the border wall. I mean, he promised it so many times and said it's not a theoretical thing. It's a physical wall made of metal and bricks, and it's going to happen. A lot of voters in your state of Arizona are going to be looking for that, I take it.
Well, it's actually a little more complicated than that. Some of the public opinion polling that was done here during the election actually showed that not all Arizonans were supportive of that wall. I mean, I think that there's a real mix, especially down on the border. There's some ranchers who want to see the wall. There's other ranchers who don't want to see the wall. Certainly, folks who are worried about extra surveillance and civil liberties are worried about increased border enforcement and the wall. So it is a more complicated picture. Here in Arizona, there's a lot of trade with Mexico. It's one of our big economic drivers here. And I think there is some concern, even from some of those in the Republican Party, about that relationship with Mexico, and a recognition that with SB 1070, the immigration enforcement law that Arizona passed, that kind of gave Arizona a black eye with Mexico, and that was damaging economically to the state. So you do have sort of a wide range of voices here in Arizona when it comes to the wall. Certainly there are those who really want to see an end to illegal immigration who are very much looking forward to the wall. But I think that's just one factor among many here.
Special shout out. If you are listening on KJZZ in Phoenix, or if you're in Arizona, we will put you to the front of the line. We definitely want to hear from you while we have Jude Joffe Block on the program. So do give us a call. 800-543-2543 is the number to call, particularly those of you who are listening on KJZZ at the moment. But of course, we're going to take all of your calls. We're going to go back to your calls in just a minute. Jude Joffe Block, you also, you have a state with one senator who is up for re-election, John McCain, who walked a really tough line when it came to support or not support for Donald Trump. But you have another senator, Jeff Flake, who from the very beginning opposed Donald Trump, refused to endorse Donald Trump, and has basically been a conservative Republican who is a never-Trumper.
That's right. I mean, I think what's interesting is, Flake was not running for re-election. So, he was able to be very vocal.
Yeah, it makes it easier.
About his opposition to Trump. I mean, he was kind of forthright about that. It said he didn't envy his colleague John McCain for having to walk that line this election. We did see McCain saying he would support Trump and then ultimately disavowing him, and his opponent trying to use it against him, the Democrat who ran against him, Ann Kirkpatrick, really trying to link John McCain to Trump as much as possible. But ultimately, McCain won decisively. So it does seem like he was in a little bit of a tricky spot for a while there, and then it seemed to not, the Trump factor seemed to actually not hurt him at the end.
That's Jude Joffe Block, senior field correspondent for KJZZ in Phoenix. We're going to go to your calls on 800-543-2543. Susan is in Rockwa, Texas. Hi, Susan, you're up.
Hey, how you doing? Well, I live in Texas, so I'm used to the whole immigration, issue with, being Mexicans being the issue of immigration, and when representatives they try to go for office, they're trying to throw the cards of Mexicans, illegals, and it just really just scratching my head why did Trump have to just directly put those two in line as illegal immigration problems, being it's the Mexican, it's the Mexico, the wall. The last time I checked, we got four walls to this country. So I don't know why he attacks Mexicans. And also, every time he talks about blacks, he says that they have guns and they're killing each other. So I hear that back and forth, and I would say, why does he have to say those kind of things about us and the blacks? And he could have won. So it's like, why do you say those things? And you still could have won. You were going to win. You were going to get all those votes that you got. You had no reason to talk about like that. And what finally scared me was that I figured the reason why he talks like that about those two people is that he can do whatever he wants, but there's two kind of people that he can never get rid of, and that's the blacks and that's the Mexicans. And so because now I see why he can't stand those two people, because they're only two people he can never get rid of.
Susan, thank you so much for the call from Rockwa, Texas. We've been hearing from you on Twitter as well. Troy on Twitter writes, expressing frustration at fellow millennials who either didn't vote or voted third party out of protest, their stubbornness helped Trump win. And another listener tweets us at The Takeaway, we can't argue over rights and liberties, then become enraged when things don't go our way. We're still one nation. You can join this conversation on Twitter. You can tweet us at The Takeaway, of course, in addition to giving us a call. Jude Joffe Block, we heard from Texas there about these issues of racial divides. You and I have already talked about immigration. What is the feel in Phoenix and around Arizona where immigration is such a big issue? You had a controversial sheriff, Joe Arpaio, who I already said was ousted from office. Is it a divided community in Phoenix between Latinos and white people, between immigrants and others. What does Phoenix feel like these days as the city is changing so much?
That's a really interesting question. You know, I just spent the last 24 hours with a lot of members of the immigrant community sort of reacting to the aftermath of the election. And I think that we actually had high school students walk out today. Mostly these were students of color from immigrant backgrounds, many of them Latino, but also some of them from other countries as well, walking out protesting Donald Trump, saying they didn't feel like this was a president that represented them, and they felt like Trump was anti-immigrant, and that as young people that they wanted to sort of let everybody know that they had a voice in the matter. And it was interesting to see because I think that really did signal a feeling of polarization for these students, especially knowing that it was a majority of white voters that elected Trump. So, you know, that was one sign. I think that we've seen a big effort among the Latino community here to organize, and that was part of what ultimately happened in the Sheriff Joe Arpaio race. There were immigrants who were going door to door to try to help get him out of office. I think in the end, a lot of it was Latino voters who came out, but also a lot of Republicans who also voted against Arpaio because he's cost taxpayers a lot of money. So that race, there's multiple factors there for why he lost. But I think that there's been a feeling that things have felt like they've been healing ever since 2010, which is when Arizona passed the immigration enforcement law, SB 1070, and that we've been, I think, getting to a place where there's not quite as much animosity as there once was between the immigrant and Latino community and the rest of the community in Arizona. And I don't know how this election will change that dynamic that we've seen in recent years.
Action in Phoenix, students walking out, reaction to the election of Donald Trump and how voters for Donald Trump feel about them. There's all a changing scene in Phoenix and in cities across the country. That's Jude Joffe Black, senior field correspondent for KJZZ. Let's go back to your calls now on 800-543-2543. William is in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, welcome. William, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Good.
I voted for Trump. And Trump triumphant, enough said. One of the things is just a comment on what I kind of seen. There was a list of celebrities that came out of people who were going to leave the United States, go to Canada, and if Trump won. But it's not so much about what the celebrities, it was what I was looking online and reading about the Canadians. The Canadians were basically making the comments of, well, you know, you can try to get into Canada, but, you know, submit your paperwork, wait your turn in line. And the most telling was the fact they said, well, our southern border is nowhere near like the American southern border. You can't simply walk into Canada and become a citizen. There's a lot that's involved. And it got me thinking that if we simply just, well, follow Canada's example, enforce the laws that we have, that we really wouldn't have this problem.
It's an interesting point of view. Canada certainly has a different geographical situation than the United States does because it doesn't share a border with another country where people, for economic reasons, probably want to immigrate directly. Although Canada does have a great deal of challenges when it comes to immigration. And William, the final point that I'll make, having been in politics a long time, every election, there's always people on one side or the other who say, if X wins, I'm moving to Canada. And you know what? It's never, ever true. I've never met a single person who says that they're going to flee the country to Canada who ever actually makes any affirmative move to do it. So I think that's sort of a mental place where many of us go. But thanks for the call. JP is in Miami listening on WLRN. Hi, JP.
Hi, how's it going? I just wanted to add to the commentary on Canada. I'm disappointed in how people are reacting to what's happened last night. A lot of people are overreacting and saying they want to leave the country and what have you. And I think, honestly, at the very least, with the Senate, the House, and the President aligned, at least things are going to get done. It might not be what everybody's hoping for, but I think at least things will get done. And I'm actually Hispanic, and I voted for Trump as well. And I just think, you know, people are overreacting. I would rather see just more constructive commentary on what are the things that we want to see fixed, one of the main reasons I voted this way is because of the Affordable Care Act. I thought it was very poorly implemented, and I actually ended up spending $700 a month for nothing, effectively. Coverage that didn't get me anything.
JP, it's really interesting the issues that you raise, because one of the big questions now, just a day after this election, and it's so early, is what happens next with Donald Trump? Does it become a sort of traditional Republican pragmatism where a Republican president and a Republican Congress do Republican things? That would be something that probably you would like and many of us are used to. Or does the rhetoric of the campaign, mass deportations, banning Muslims, bombing the relatives of terrorists, bringing torture and waterboarding back, does that become the policy of the United States? That's an open question right now, whether that campaign rhetoric becomes real or not. So I really appreciate the call. Vicky is in Long Island listening on WNYC. Hi, Vicky.
Hi. Thanks for taking this call. I was a registered Republican for a very long time, actually changed my party during the course of this election cycle because I've just been utterly disgusted by you know, everything that's transpired. And I voted for Hillary Clinton, and I find the result deeply disturbing, the election result.
Vicky, thank you so much for the call. Vicky, I really appreciate the call from Long Island. Jude Joffe Block, you're there in Phoenix. I wanted to ask you, before we have just about a minute left, we're going to take a short break. One of the pieces of Donald Trump's rhetoric in the campaign, of course, was deportations. There are a lot of immigrants, you mentioned them already, in Phoenix and around your area. Is there a palpable fear of roundups now?
Well, that was very much on the minds of the high school students who marched out today, saying that they were personally fearful for themselves, for their family members. Some had a plan to apply for deferred action for childhood arrivals, President Obama's program that allows work permits, and now they were saying they have uncertain futures.
That's Jude Joffe Block from KJZZ in Phoenix, who's going to be joining us again just after this break. We're going to take a short break and go back to your calls on 800-543-2543. I'm Todd Zwillick. Stick with us for the rest of this hour because we're getting your take on the election of Donald Trump as president. On the road forward, stick with us. Welcome back. It's The Road Forward. I'm Todd Zwillick with The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC. We're taking your calls on 800-543-2543. You're also reaching out to us on Twitter at The Takeaway. Melanie on Twitter says, I'm terrified of this new post-fact/fact-free reality. Going forward, can anyone get ahead through bald-faced lying? It's insane. I will say also, as we look at our TV screens here in the studio, there are protests throughout the country, people pouring into the streets, at least in several cities here in New York, places like L.A. and Chicago. There appear to be large protests as people demonstrate against the election of Donald Trump. It's all over cable news. So at least some people in some cities expressing their frustration and their fears with the election of Donald Trump as president by taking some direct action and pouring into the streets in some of these cities. We are taking your calls on 800-543-2543. Emmanuel is in Philadelphia listening on WHYY, I take it. Hi, Emmanuel.
They can still win. Even though they didn't win it this second time, they might win it another time. Because they get as many chances as they want.
Emmanuel, how old are you? How old are you, Emmanuel? Oh, okay. Well, we appreciate the call. Emmanuel was definitely a young listener, and we like to get him as young as 5 or as old as 90 here on The Road Forward. Michael is in Queens listening on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Todd. I'm just calling because I'm really shocked
with the events, especially of the results this early Wednesday. Still in complete shock and don't really know how to deal with it. I think it was kind of a wake-up call that, the elections were really ugly and a lot of attacks on liberals and, liberal media, and that liberals are out, that it's one big conspiracy. I've always grown up in the coast. I grew up in California, and then now I live in New York. And I think it's just a wake-up call that there are all these working-class white people. They don't have factory jobs anymore. They're unhappy, and they're willing to elect anyone, even someone that's unhinged.
Yeah, Michael, I can really hear the frustration in your voice, and thank you for the call from Queens, New York. Peter Henry on Twitter says, I'm worried about how to be a fellow citizen to so many I can never agree with on so much. Jew Joffe Black, you're still there on KJZZ in Phoenix. We are seeing some protests around the country in cities like LA and Chicago and New York. I don't know if you're seeing any there in Phoenix, but I wonder if Phoenix is a place. You said that tensions have eased since 2010 and the passage of SB 1070 there. I wonder if Phoenix is a place where you think that these types of protests now out of frustration is a possibility.
Right. I mean, yeah, today we saw high school students taking to the streets. They rallied in front of the state capitol, sort of an impromptu walkout. I'm sitting in a radio studio, so I'm not able to see if there's any reports of any protests going on right now. But, I wouldn't put it past. I know there's a lot of people who are frustrated, who wanted to see a different outcome, who are worried about what these policies will mean for them and their families in the immigrant community. You know, we certainly have a history here of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who racially profiled Latinos. He was found in a court to do that as part of his efforts to enforce immigration laws. So there's a lot of skepticism here about what tough immigration policies mean on the ground for the community.
Ed is in Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KJZZ. Hi, Ed, you're up.
Hi, Jerry Joffe Block. I live in Phoenix, and I saw the protesters at high school today. I just want to let you guys know that I'm Hispanic. My entire family voted for Donald Trump. I think there needs to be a clarification on the news. My mom came from Mexico. She came here legally, and people confuse legal immigrants versus illegal immigrants, and it's not the same. Not all white people are Nazis, or not all white people are KKK. So I just want to let you know that there's a distinction between just because everybody's brown doesn't mean that they all support legal or illegal immigration. So that's all I wanted to put out there. My mom waited in line. My whole family, we all voted for Donald Trump, and we just want the rule of laws to be respected and obeyed. And we do have friends that came here illegally, but then they're unhappy. But that's the situation. You have to, when you break the laws, you have to pay the consequences. And I know that's not fair. There's families that are probably broken, but those people that have broken families, they also have families in Mexico too. So
Ed, thank you so much for the call from Phoenix. Jew Joffe Block, I heard in Ed's statement there one of the themes that we've had throughout this show, which is the preconceived notions that so many of us have. A Hillary voter looking at a Trump voter like Ed might think that they know a lot about the way he thinks just by his vote, and likewise the attitudes that people have about so many of the immigrants in your community.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate Ed's point. And I think that, too often we do end up, making generalizations, and I appreciate the nuance. And I have heard from Latino residents here who have immigrant backgrounds, who came legally, who are also frustrated by illegal immigration and say that doesn't make me anti-immigrant. And so that is a perspective that we do have represented here. Absolutely.
Jew Joffe Block, senior field correspondent for KJZZ in Phoenix. I want to thank you for joining us and bringing your perspective. Thanks so much, Jude.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. We're going to go back to your calls on 800-543-2543. John is in Binghamton, New York. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
I find I have a unique I'm a unique individual in that my parents are Catholics from Northern Ireland who immigrated here in the early 1950s. So I understand the immigrant thing to some degree. But, you know, it's I think my cousins in Ireland send me messages on Facebook and stuff, and they're not very good. They're kind of making fun of America now, you know, kind of labeling it like a hick, redneck, you know, racist. I don't know what that's all about, but, you know, regardless, Obama being elected spoke volumes internationally, but unfortunately he was the obstructionism stopped him from doing anything worthwhile. And so now we're stuck with where we are now. Let's just make the best of it. The one good side to this thing right now is that, unfortunately, Obama and Hillary and Kerry's foreign policy was very flawed. They tried to upset Bashar Assad's regime by doing the same old trick, you know, bring the CIA in, spooks, create, you know, rebel disorder and chaos. And the Russians are calling us on it, and it's true. You know, we can't do that. We can't do regime change to our favor by doing that type of thing. And that's what they've been doing. I know that's what they've been doing. And
John, I really appreciate it because Donald Trump is one candidate who's had more of a retrenchment set of policies, at least in some of his rhetoric in the campaign, and might be a president with a foreign policy that pulls back from a lot of these kind of traditional ways of doing things that you described. And that's a bit of nuance from you that I really appreciate. Eduardo is in St. Paul, Minnesota now, listening on the great NPR, Minnesota Public Radio. Hi, Eduardo.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. One point that I want to make is for what I observed and what I saw, most of all of the Trump supporters, you know, were claiming, were angry, were upset, frustrated about the lack of opportunity, that the American dream is fading away. But in part, if they really think about it, we really think about it and look at who had created that kind of lack of opportunity, you can talk about the Republican side, because they are the ones who oppose a more common social order to benefit everybody versus just some. And if you think about it, people think about this the way that the Republican Party, primarily conservative social and social issues and economic issues, have prevented the opportunities to flourish for everybody, not just for some.
Eduardo, what you're saying is very, very interesting. I think a lot of Republicans would object to your view there. However, what you're describing is the coming conflict within Republicans, because Donald Trump has been elected very, very far from the traditional conservative Republicanism that you're blaming for a lot of these problems. He's a populist. And in many ways, either traditional conservative Republicans like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and others, they're either going to change the way they do business in Congress and this old conservative Republicanism, or they're going to find themselves at war with Donald Trump. So that type of conservatism that you're lamenting there has challenges of its own, and it's from within the Republican Party. It's going to be very fascinating and unpredictable. I really appreciate your call, Eduardo. Mark is in Brooklyn on WNYC. Mark, you've been out at some of the protests that we're seeing on the TV screens now.
Yeah, so I started at Union Square, where we gathered and chanted chants of protest, and then we marched all the way to Trump Tower from Union Square, blocking traffic and chanting and absolutely expressing our outrage and the fact that we are not going to accept this bigot fascist sitting down. We are going to protest every single day.
Mark, for people who aren't in New York and don't know the geography here, you're describing a march that started in the middle of Manhattan and went about 50 blocks north up to Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue, where that's located. Mark, how did this protest start? Was it Facebook groups? What got people out into the streets? Who organized it?
So I heard about it on Facebook through some activist friends. I know it was originally organized by a group called Socialist Alternatives. And when we were at Union Square, there were some representatives from that organization that spoke over loudspeaker. But, you know, once we started marching, it was really just more about chants. Black Lives Matter, Queer Lives Matter, you know, bleep your wall, and really just expressing our outrage.
Mark, what's next for you? I appreciate the protest tonight. What's next for you?
It's time to organize. I mean, I voted for Jill Stein. I do not believe that the establishment has anything to offer for us. And, you know, we're going to organize our resistance to every single one of Trump's proposed policies. And we understand that the power is in the people and not the ballot box.
Mark, thank you so much for the call. Mark has just come from one of the protests that started in Union Square in the middle of Manhattan here in New York and marched up Fifth Avenue to Trump Tower right around 59th Street. So that's about a 50-block walk. That's a big march there. Let's go out of New York City now to what used to be the swing state of Ohio, and in this election was the deep red state of Ohio. Karen Kassler is State House Bureau Chief at Ohio Public Radio, who's joining me now. Karen, welcome.
Good evening. I've been up for a long time,
and all of us have. Any stumbles or anything that's blamed on total, complete exhaustion gets a pass tonight on this show because
Thank goodness.
I spent 24 hours in Pennsylvania election reporting, and you will get no arguments from me for being tired, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Ohio is the quintessential battleground, of course, and you saw these late efforts by Hillary Clinton to really try to juice up and roll out traditional Obama supporters in Cuyahoga County and in Cleveland. She had the endorsement of LeBron James, who's pretty much the most popular person in the world, and certainly in Akron, Ohio, and in Cleveland. But not able to swamp the enormous support that Donald Trump got in pretty much every other county, especially in the middle of Ohio.
Right. And I think when you look at how Ohio voted in this election, it's very interesting because there really was not the groundswell of support that Barack Obama had in 2008 and 2012. When you look at the number of counties she won, Ohio has 88 counties. Obama won 17 of those counties in 2012. Clinton won 7 of those counties. And that really takes down that number. And the other part of it was that of the 81 counties that Donald Trump won in Ohio, he built on Mitt Romney's wins back in 2012. And so he had a larger margin of victory, arguably, and she had a smaller margin of victory in the areas where she really, really needed to win. You mentioned Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland is. The voter turnout was down there, and that makes a difference. Voter turnout here in Columbus, in the center of the state, was up. This county is Democratic, but it wasn't enough. And so in the end, it translates to a lot fewer votes, and I mean a lot fewer, hundreds of thousands of fewer votes.
There are places like Wisconsin where Donald Trump actually did worse than John McCain or Mitt Romney, and in a place like Wisconsin where he didn't really beat Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton sort of lost because Donald Trump didn't swamp her. She just wasn't able to turn out voters. Did Donald Trump do appreciably better than his Republican predecessors in Ohio? Was it a combination then of Republican Trump victory and Clinton loss, inability to get out Obama voters, or was it one or the other?
Absolutely a combination of both.
Yeah.
I mean, like that whole idea of Clinton won 7 counties compared to Obama's 17 counties. There were counties that reliably vote with the rest of the state, and you can look at them and see. You remember, Ohio has picked the winner in the presidential race every single year since 1960. That was the last time that Ohio voted for a candidate who didn't go on to win the White House. We had voted for Richard Nixon, and John F. Kennedy won that year. So this year was the same kind of year. And so what we ended up with was counties that normally did not vote Republican that did this time. I mean, Montgomery County, which is where Dayton, Ohio is, that county had not voted for a Republican in 28 years, and yesterday it did. And so there were 7 counties, like I said, that voted for Hillary Clinton, but the margin of victory there was not enough for her to overcome the margins of victory that Donald Trump had in other areas. I mean, Ohio is, you know, a couple of big urban areas, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, but then a lot of rural areas. And all those rural areas really do start to add up to a lot of votes, and mostly for the Republican.
So much like Pennsylvania, just next door, where I spent so much time in my home state reporting, because the dynamic in Pennsylvania and Ohio, Karen Kassler, is so similar. And really, Pennsylvania turned out just the same way with the same dynamics.
Exactly. And these were the blue wall states. These are the states that I think Hillary Clinton had really thought that she couldn't lose, or she couldn't lose all of them, at least. And she spent a fair amount of time in Ohio toward the end. But the question was it enough? I mean, Ohio starts early voting 28 days before the election. And so there was a real push to try to get voters out in that 28-day period. We had 2 weekends where people could go out and in-person early vote. And that was really when you saw the push in Cleveland, for instance. instance, Jay-Z came and did a concert. Hillary Clinton was there. Beyonce was there, trying to get people to come out and vote because tickets for that concert were available near the Board of Elections, coincidentally enough.
Right.
And so, you know, those were the kinds of activities that were trying to push people out and get them to vote. But in the end, you know, Hillary Clinton came into Election Day with a lead, but it wasn't a big enough lead to overcome some things that Donald Trump had done. One other area, Youngstown, right on that Pennsylvania border, right near Pittsburgh, that area was normally really, really Democratic. That area broke for Donald Trump this time, and only one of those counties was Democratic. The others went Republican, and that made a difference.
Let's get one more call from you, the listeners, before we go to a short break. Adina is in Missouri listening on the NPR app. Adina, quickly.
For taking my call. I have two points which are kind of based on personal beliefs. One, I think that the answer to what everyone's asking is how could Trump be elected? Who could elect Trump as awful a person as people believe he is? I believe there are a couple of generations from the mid-20th century that were used to a certain way of life. They were very conservative, and as they were coming to age, they were growing up. The economic and cultural shape of America was changing rapidly, and they weren't okay with that, but they had to keep quiet because they were, I guess, polite enough to obey the law and keep quiet and not become violent. But after a certain time, Trump came along and kind of voiced what they were thinking for 40 plus years.
Yeah, Adina, you're expressing the sentiments that so many people have shared throughout this election, and that Hillary Clinton supporters are reckoning with now. I want to thank you for the call. We're going to take a very short break here on The Road Forward and be back with your calls after just 1 minute. So stick with us. This is Todd Zwillick. This is The Road Forward. Call us on 800-543-2543.
This is Mary from Columbia, South Carolina.
My name is Jean. I'm calling from Miami, Florida.
Hi, this is Jim from Cleveland.
This is Jillian from Ohio.
This is Matthew Meadows calling me from Seattle.
My name is David Kyle, and I'm from Collegeville, Pennsylvania.
Benjamin, calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
I woke up feeling oddly empowered, recognizing that I have a responsibility ever more so now to participate in the democratic process more effectively.
I'm just in shock. I mean, I feel like this has been a victory for American isolationism, for bigotry and hatred. I feel like a stranger in my own country.
Don't blame Gary Johnson. Don't blame Jill Stein. Don't blame James Comey or any of this other stuff. The Democrats need to look inside, see what they stand for, and if they continue to deliver milquetoast candidates like Hillary Clinton, they will continue to see the same results.
I'm zero shock. She rigged the primary and nobody wanted to read the emails. Monkey see no evil. Could have been Bernie.
I believe that America just experienced one of the greatest con jobs of all time, but I think it will only take a year or two for the working class people who were duped into voting for Trump to see the reality of this con job.
I'm very happy about Trump being president. It lets America see that we can move forward and become united, as in capitalized.
Hi, this is Bridget from Rhode Island. After 3 hours of sleep, perhaps, I'm still trying to figure out how I explain to my daughter the state of our country and how we failed her as a nation. How are we going to be able to unify this country like our president-elect has stated? How can we unify when the man in power was the one that divided us all?
This is The Road Forward. I'm Todd Zwillick, and we're taking your calls for the rest of this hour on 800-543-2543. We're also hearing from you on Twitter, at The Takeaway. Natalie Young says, I'm sad and scared because Trump supporters have already shouted at my friends and family to go back where you came from. That's Natalie Yang. Joining me also is Karen Kassler. She's State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio. Karen, we're seeing now protests in some cities throughout the country, Chicago, Los Angeles, here in New York, as people pour into the streets to protest the election of Donald Trump. Cleveland is a city that's had significant racial tensions and significant clashes. Especially when it comes to police violence. There was the death of young Tamir Rice in Cleveland. I wonder if that's a place I don't know the feel in the city there and whether it's a place where tensions could spill over.
I don't know. I'll be in Cleveland tomorrow night, as a matter of fact. But I know that that was something that was a concern. I mean, Cleveland's been through a lot in the last year, but handled it really amazingly well in terms of Tamir Rice and some other incidents, but also the Republican National Convention, which went really, really well in terms of protesters getting a chance to state their case and not having a whole lot of violent incidents. There was also a huge parade when the Cleveland Cavaliers won, and there were no incidents there. So there's been a lot of activity in Cleveland that's gone fairly well. But certainly there's a question now. Columbus, where I am in the state capitol, we had one of these protests tonight, as a matter of fact. A peaceful protest, people getting a chance to state their concerns. And there are legitimate concerns here. And so I think that these kind of protests, you started seeing them last night out on the West Coast, and I think they're going to continue. Because as we keep hearing in the callers who are calling up, there is still frustration. There was going to be frustration on either side, no matter who won. And so now the question is, how does that frustration get channeled into action? Are people going to take to the streets and do what we're seeing in these cities? Are they going to mobilize, as we're hearing some callers talk about, and come together? And God forbid, look ahead to 2020, which I don't think any of us really wanted to talk about tonight. You know, many of us wanted a little bit of a break before we start talking about the next presidential election. But I would also argue that the next election isn't the 2020 election. It's the next election in your community.
That's right.
And people who only vote every 4 years are missing out on an opportunity to really affect change within their community and within their state.
I couldn't agree with that more. That's Karen Kassler. She's State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television in Columbus, Ohio. Let's go back to your calls on 800-543-2543. Sean, you're in Philadelphia, and I was just in Chester County, right outside of Philadelphia, reporting from the polls yesterday morning. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to make the point that you mentioned dialogue before, you know, dialogue between the two sides. And what I wanted to say, I'm an independent, but I voted for Trump. You can't have dialogue when one side starts with the premise that the other side are racists. And, you know, and that characterizes this whole election cycle, because just because people like me, people who used to have a really good manufacturing job and now I don't, and now I see the left's religion of allowing anyone to come in whenever they want to our country like it's a right, and just because I'm against illegal immigration, that doesn't make me a racist. And so I'm hearing, I mean, half of your callers were using words like bigot, and we can't have a dialogue. We can't have a dialogue until the left really looks itself in the mirror and says, you know what, we need to stop using this political weapon. Yes, it's been useful for us before. Whenever someone disagreed with Obama, we called them a racist and they shut up. Well, nothing good comes from that.
Sean,
that's what
I really appreciate what you have to say, and I have a question for you before you go. I really appreciate what you say about the manufacturing job that you had, or the fact that you're against illegal immigration. Those things definitely don't make you a racist. Did you ever have any pause in your own mind for your support of Donald Trump when you heard him say things like ban Muslims from this country, or read the poem The Snake, some of the things that he did from the podium? Did that ever make you say, well, I definitely have these economic concerns, I definitely have concerns over immigration, but I really don't like those other things? Or were those things sort of okay with you? How did you process those things that came from him?
Excellent question. The problem is your premises are wrong. Number one, I know both quotes that you're talking about, and you've taken both of them out of context. He didn't say he wanted to ban all Muslims out of this country. He never said that. If you listen to the entire – almost everything that your callers accuse him of doing, if you put it in context, you say, yes, that was a boorish thing to say. I wouldn't like that. But he did not mean it in the racist tone that people assign to him. This guy, he's not a politician. He doesn't think ahead of time. He just talks like he's sitting around with a bunch of his buddies, and he doesn't think it through. And because he sticks by what he says, he won't easily correct it. That's what happened with the Muslim thing. We who supported him knew what he meant by that. And he's come around to what he really meant in the first place, which is you shouldn't allow people who are to come to this country unchecked, who come from an area known for radical Islam that's behind terrorism. We should have a check. And he inartfully said, well, we should just ban all Muslims. See, that's what I'm talking about. You can't take it out of context.
And it gets to be a really tough one to interpret. But, Sean, I really appreciate you bringing your perspective on that as a Trump supporter who definitely has concerns over your own job and your own views on immigration. We appreciate the call. Shantosh is in Blacksburg, Virginia. Hi, Shantosh. Santosh.
Hi. Thanks.
Excuse me. Go
right
ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. So I'm shocked and confused because I want to ask you and the people of America a question. What do we tell our children? Because we had our six-year-old son, one of our friends' six-year-old son comes in and asks, Mommy, what does groping mean? So if a six-year-old child is asking that question, I have no idea what to tell them. And if a person who has a history of treating women that way can get away with it and can become a president of the most powerful nation in the world, then what are we teaching our children is what I really want to ask everybody.
Santosh, thank you so much for the call from Blacksburg, Virginia. Virginia, of course, a state that Hillary Clinton did manage to win, that Barack Obama won as well. Jim is in Brick Township, I believe, in New Jersey. Hi, Jim.
Yes, I am. Hi. I'm just a conservative Democrat. I won't mention sexism, racism, or xenophobia, just economics. The Democrats did not gut the unions. The Democrats didn't gut manufacturing jobs. Today, we talk about Comey having an influence on the last minute of the election. Today, they announced New Jersey's going to take over Atlantic City. Trump sucked the life out of Atlantic City with the casinos. Either by design or by default. Who's going to bail out the United States?
Jim, thank
you. What we had Bush was a weak governor. This guy has no legislative or executive experience except for as a businessman.
Jim, thank you so much for the call. And a lot of people in New Jersey do have direct experience with Donald Trump and his investments in hotels in Atlantic City in the 80s and 90s. We heard from Jim Davis on Facebook, who says this is a great day for America. All the damage done by Obama will now be undone. Now, I take it that Jim Davis is referring, of course, to Obamacare and probably other policies, too. Karen Kassler there at Ohio Public Radio and Television. You know, trade was a huge part of Donald Trump's pitch here, and he's pledged to dive back into NAFTA, renegotiate that deal, either renegotiate or drop the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP. It's a huge issue in Ohio, the loss of manufacturing jobs and free trade. And I wonder what the expectation from all of those working class people in the red counties and the red districts that you've already described, how urgent their expectation is that Donald Trump make good on this promise to either radically renegotiate or drop trade deals altogether.
You can absolutely see it on the map. When you see the counties that went red, the manufacturing and trade issue was huge. I mean, you have the area around Toledo where there was a Jeep manufacturing plant. That area went mostly red, except for the one county where Toledo actually is, the urban area. And also, as I was mentioning before, Youngstown, right on the border with Pittsburgh. That area, there's a lot of auto manufacturing in that area. So trade was huge. Trade, we also had in Ohio, one of our two U.S. senators, Republican Rob Portman, was on the ballot. And so the trade issue issue was a big part in his big win. He won by almost 22 points over his Democratic challenger. And so this is absolutely a big issue. And Donald Trump really talked about this a lot. He talked about when he came to the Youngstown area, where he made several visits in that part of the state, talking about bringing those jobs back, getting your jobs back. The question is going to be, what is he talking about? What kind of jobs? Is he talking about those actual jobs that left? I mean, we had steel companies that have left over the years and that sort of thing. Is he talking about bringing those back, or is he talking about different jobs? And I think the voters there are going to be holding him accountable for what he has said. And that's going to be the question as he moves from being a candidate to actually governing. Those voters are going to hold him accountable for the things that he promised and what he intends to do. And that's going to be his challenge going forward. There are a lot of people who are really looking forward to him doing the things that he said he was going to do. And if he doesn't do them, what's going to happen?
Those places in Ohio are ground zero for the promises that Donald Trump has made on trade and the economy. And one of the most fascinating and maybe scary questions for a lot of people is, how much can Donald Trump really deliver here as the world is globalizing? Because that's not going to stop. He can't just say you're fired to globalism. It takes governance and nuance. And if he can't deliver on the expectations to these people, what does Donald Trump resort to in his politics? Yeah. Hey, Karen Kessler, I really want to thank you for joining us and giving us the view from Ohio. It's been enormously enlightening. So thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it.
That's Karen Kessler. She's State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television, who is talking to us from Columbus, Ohio. We're hearing from you on Twitter as well. John tweets to us, I'm a Vietnam veteran, alpha male, Harley, ex-hunter. For the first time, I'm ashamed of my country, and I cried. We're going to go back to your calls for just a few more minutes that we have in this hour on 800-543-2543. John is in St. Louis. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you doing today?
Great. Go right ahead.
First, I just want to wish my husband, Charles Mooneyham, a happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
I'm calling today because it's a very disappointing day for me. I did vote for Hillary just because I thought she was the less of two evils. My major concern is that with Trump as the president and Pence as vice president, with all the conservatives in Senate, is that we're going to see a backfall on human equality and gay rights. I've been legally married for 2 years now, and I've got many friends who are legally married, and the thought of having my certificate revoked and having that marriage mean nothing.
John, are you heartened at all by the fact that your right to gay marriage was the result of a Supreme Court decision? You know, the Senate and the House, no matter how much they want to, they really can't undo that.
Right.
Does that might give you a little bit of solace?
Well, it does. It does provide a little. I just hope that we can still move forward with human rights as a whole, including women's rights as well.
John, thank you for the call from St. Louis. Lenny is in New York listening to us on WNYC. Hey, Lenny.
Hi. So my question is, why is anyone talking about what a tight election this really is? I don't know. I'm looking at Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. That's 0.7% that Donald Trump won by. 95,000 votes over three states, and you know, and Hillary is president. What? I don't know.
It couldn't have been closer. And in fact, John, if you look at the country at large, votes are still coming in. But Hillary Clinton, by the time the votes are counted, appears to have won the popular vote, but lost by razor thin margins in these states that you're describing. And so she's lost electorally.
Did she give up too early?
Go ahead. Say it again.
Did she give up too early?
Well, no, it doesn't appear that she gave up too early because these states were called.
You know that Donald Trump would have had agents down there, lawyers down there making claims that this has happened and that happened, and they would have recounted.
There's no question that it was an incredibly close election, Lenny. I have a feeling that if Hillary Clinton's army of lawyers thought that there was any profit in refusing to concede and challenging the results in court, they probably would have done it. We have time for probably one more call. Dave in Coral Springs, Florida, in the swing state of Florida that went red. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm a Democrat, I'm a naturalized citizen, and I've always voted Democrat, but I've seen the the shift in for instance, I worked for a large corporation, and I moved to the South. The company offered me a job in the South, and I left the company because of the, I believe in capitalism that built this country, but it's on steroids, I think. The employees are really getting stifted, and I think I supported Trump because I believe he will, he will make a difference and change the way business is run in the United States.
Dave, thanks for the call. And Dave points up one thing that's a really good place to end as we look forward. Donald Trump's Republicanism is not traditional Republicanism. It is populist. And traditional Republicans, as we said, like Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, you name it, across the Congress and across the country, they have a challenge on their hands, too, because the new type of Republicanism that Donald Trump is bringing with his populist victory is going to be a change for all of them. I want to thank you all for joining us and for giving me your calls all this hour. It's been a pleasure. I'm Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent from The Takeaway, and this has been The Road Forward.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.